Breakdown on 10th Avenue South is the name of the album. Now, it's not a place that we generally associate with unrest, but over the past number of months, Hong Kong has seen some very serious disturbances and clashes between police and pro-democracy protesters. So how did it get to this point? Well, here now to explain what's going on in Hong Kong is Graham Finlay from the School of Politics in UCD. And Graham, what's going on in Hong Kong is going on again this afternoon, and there's more like going to be involved in all the rest of it. So explain briefly the relationship between China and Hong Kong.
Well, it's a pretty complicated one, really. Hong Kong was only a British Crown colony because they basically took it from China in the 19th century during the Opium Wars. And this is not something China has forgotten, and it's a big part of the Chinese national self-understanding is based on their humiliation by Western powers, especially Britain, one's almost prepared to say. And so until 1997, when China takes over Hong Kong again, you know, that really rankled and similarly continues to rankle. Because in many ways, the kind of democratic reforms which Hong Kongers are agitating for in their millions are the kind of democratic reforms which Britain asked for in the Sino-British Joint Declaration in 1984, which set the path for Hong Kong's transition back to China, and which somewhat controversially, you know, Chris Patten, one of the most interesting figures of recent years, gave to the people of Hong Kong in 1994, just before 1997. So Britain was happy to govern Hong Kong undemocratically until 3 years before it goes back to China, and then tries to guarantee these democratic institutions for when China takes over. This really has bugged China for a long time. And as it's grown in confidence over the last almost 20 years, it's increasingly tried to roll back the democratic reforms, which are very, very recent in Hong Kong, with an eye to full Sinicization in 2047. Because these democratic guarantees, the guarantees of their legal system as a special administrative region of China, the one country, two systems approach, which is what they describe it, you know, the socialist system on the mainland, as you might call it, and the capitalist system with its own laws, currency, and everything else, and rights in Hong Kong. China's envisaging that to be gone in 2047, but obviously a lot sooner if it would have its way.
Okay, it's envisaging that to be gone. One of the things about Hong Kong is that in terms of kind of the, I don't know, the world that we live in, if you like, it's been a phenomenally successful place on every level, hasn't it?
It's an absolutely remarkable place. I mean, it enjoyed this immense growth and prosperity, partly like Singapore, by being a haven for really unfettered capitalism, you know, without, again, a great deal of democracy under the British. And because of its very low regulation, which was touted by American libertarians like Milton Friedman, it has become one of the world's great financial centers. And it's an incredibly densely populated place of over 7 million people, over a million of whom have been in the streets. I mean, it's really important to know just how big these demonstrations are. But yes, I mean, it's a business zone. It's a huge financial center. Its currency, the Hong Kong dollar, is one of the most traded currencies in the world.
Yeah, I mean, there is inequity in terms of the money that people have. There's no question about that. But by the same token, it's an extremely successful place, biggest skyscrapers in the world,
yeah,
the smallest
yeah.
area.
And it's got more millionaires, more people with more than $30 million than Manhattan.
So with all of that, would that rankle in any way with China in terms of like, gosh, you know, we wouldn't mind a bit of that? Or, sorry, that's not the way it's done?
You know, China's already sort of getting a bit of it. So in 1997, when China took Hong Kong over, they declared it a special administrative region because they needed that access to world financial markets. And they still need it to some extent. The fact that this is what this is all about. The extradition law, which prompted these latest round of protests, was a direct threat to Hong Kongers' much superior honoring of the rule of law than mainland China. Courts in mainland China are highly arbitrary. They
arbitrary detention, torture, and all the rest of it.
They basically disappear people.
Yeah, exactly. And the Hong Kong people just don't want to have anything to do with that
at
all.
And they have disappeared Hong Kongers. There were five employees of Causeway Books, which is maybe a symbol of how much freer things are in Hong Kong, where you can go and read books which you could never read or even find in China. So you know, Hong Kongers are really afraid of this, partly because they actually do cherish the freedoms they enjoy under the arrangements, but also partly because it's a real threat to business. You know, business likes the rule of law. They don't want to think that business people are going to be disappeared if the Chinese government decides they don't like them or they want a piece of the action, as you say.
So, okay, the Chinese government and the Hong Kong ruling government, if we can call it that. I mean, like, are they inextricably linked, or is there such a thing as like a lot of the people in Hong Kong don't particularly like the fact that their leaders are saying this is what's going to happen?
Yes, no,
they're
I mean,
not just, you know, slagging China.
They are basically strongly linked, and Beijing exercises tremendous control over the chief executive of Hong Kong. The chief executive of Hong Kong is not directly elected. It's she currently, Carrie Lam, is elected by an electoral college of 1,200 people who are supposed to represent all the different viewpoints in Hong Kong society, including people who are opposed to Beijing. But in practice, it's drawn from all these what they call functional constituencies, which are a bit like our Shannon constituencies in terms of their sectoral constituencies. But they represent the elite of Hong Kong. They represent people who don't want to rock the boat with China unduly. And so basically, the chief executive is more or less picked by Beijing. I mean, Carrie Lam was Beijing's candidate. The nomination process has led to basically the candidates being screened by Beijing. And they're supposed to love Hong Kong and be patriotic, and that means patriotic Chinese people.
Right, but Hong Kong is not, the people in Hong Kong are not necessarily able in any way at all to directly pick their own leaders, are they?
No, and that's okay. One of the things they're sort of agitating for. They were promised universal suffrage in 2017 for this election of Carrie Lam. They didn't get it, and in fact, Beijing's going the other way in many, many ways. The whole one country, two systems, and the agreements with the British in 1984 are really under threat, and Beijing has been continuously pushing. And the only reason it hasn't just gone sort of completely to the direct administration of Hong Kong, which is on the cards. I mean, Beijing has sort of, some people suspect they're prepared to just absorb Hong Kong and get rid of the two systems. But no, they don't directly pick their elected officials. Even their parliament has 70 members, 35 of whom are directly elected. Another 5 are elected by a territory-wide public, but the rest are again elected through these functional constituencies, which Beijing has control over. And so Beijing dominates and will be expected to dominate the legislature for
a phenomenal percentage of the population has come out in the streets, and like the civil servants and everybody, right? It's not just kind of, you know, students with nothing better to do kind of thing, as some people might think. And like, they're all out there and they're saying, we want to stay the way we are, and we don't believe one word your woman says, we don't believe one word China says or anything like that at all, and we will not give up the freedoms that we have because they're absolutely brilliant, and look how brilliantly Hong Kong works. Okay, all of that. But there's a protest movement. Was there a protest movement 6 months ago? Was there no need for it? Suddenly this summer.
Yeah, well, they've learned a lot of lessons from the last big protests, which really unsettled the Chinese. And this actually, I think, gets back to your previous question about the relationship between China and the chief executive. China wants the chief executive and the police of Hong Kong to deal with this, right? And they have cashiered chief executives in the past where they have not been seen to control Hong Kong and its people. And so in 2014, there was a massive 79-day sit-in in the central areas of Hong Kong. People will remember that. I mean, which obviously has a huge effect on Hong Kong business, just the way these demonstrations at the airport have a huge effect on Hong Kong's business. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, these eventually fizzled out. And they were able to arrest the leaders, one of whom was just recently released, actually. But what's striking about these latest rounds of protests is, A, they're bigger, and B, they're largely leaderless. You know, you might see spokespeople who are wearing masks at press conferences.
It's pretty clever, isn't it?
It is. And you know, they've got two ways of slogan. One is to be like water. Be water. So to sort of melt away. No, don't just stay there the way they did under the umbrella protests or revolution, they called it in 2014, where people used umbrellas to ward off the tear gas, which has been a big feature of the repression of these particular protests. But I know they've sort of melted away. They haven't had any identifiable leaders which could be arrested. It's really quite cleverly done. They did learn their lessons. It should be said right now, these people are incredibly brave.
Right. Now, Carrie Lam,
because the violence carried out is really remarkable.
Yeah,
even by
Carrie Lam did freak out, and she said, like, you know, like the bill that allows extradition has been formally withdrawn. And they're going, hold on a second. Mm. Like, what kind of language is that? Is it dead or is it not? And of course, it's not dead.
She's even said it's dead, but they don't believe her, as you say. And again, she is basically China's creature. And again, if China decides, and this could really happen possibly tomorrow, to crack down in the typical Chinese way. They've massed hundreds or over 100, dozens and dozens of armored personnel carriers on the border. Armed police are training in Shenzhen's, which is on the PRC side, stadium to really crack some heads probably on Sunday, which is going to be the biggest demonstration. It's also a demonstration which the police have not permitted in Hong Kong.
But China could go, they have permitted. They're
permitting some of the demonstrations today.
Right. Oh, okay.
But they are not permitting what they're expecting to be a huge demonstration or protest on Sunday. And you could see China giving up on Carrie Lam and instituting repression. And if they do that, then, they may well reintroduce the bill, the extradition bill. And again, the protesters want, among other things, the extradition bill gone, but they also want to have the protests not be described by the government as riots. Because if you're a rioter in Hong Kong, and especially in the PRC, very bad things can be done to you. You can be detained, and especially if you're extradited to the PRC, then really bad things can happen to you. Because even if you're just there, you're not rioting yourself, but you're just near it, you can be charged as a rioter.
Isn't that one of the reasons why so many civil servants have now come out as well? Because they hate the whole explanation of it as being a riot. And even workers in Disneyland, it seems, over there, all went on to, this isn't a riot, this is something that we deserve to have. This is something that we have had, and you're not going to take it away from us.
It is very, very important that for the workers and for anybody who's exposed themselves to the kind of retributions, that it be reclassified as a riot. That might diffuse the protests, but probably not. I mean, they'll continue protesting because, of course, if you're engaged in a protest, then you're going to keep protesting. Whereas if you've been called a rioter, and recently the PRC has amped up its rhetoric and called them terrorists, I mean, anything can be really done to you. And of course, this could include losing your job.
Governing and economic systems different to China, it's right across the board, and they're very happy living under that and have been.
They are. One of the things is they were a former colony of Britain, and then they shifted to being basically a colony of China, mm-hmm. right? A really wealthy colony, but a colony. And so China controls their foreign and defense policy. Right, so they're not an independent state.
Yeah.
And it's not really clear how many of the protesters want an independent state of Hong Kong. I mean, they could be another Singapore. That is not realistic given China's power in the world.
Happy as it was, leave it as it is.
They would like to leave it as it is. I mean, again, you've got two camps. China's main hope, and we probably have to hope that they go this way rather than really repressing people, is that they're trying to distinguish between the radicals, who they see as the violent ones, and actually the rhetoric emerging from the demonstrations is really typically Hong Kongese or even China's. You know, if they sort of contained and maybe allegedly attacked a couple people in the crowd at the airport over the last few days, and the protesters hold up signs like, "We are sorry for our mistake and our poor lack of wisdom," or something like that. It's a very, very interesting form of protest. Anyway, they're happy with the system, and what China's trying to do is divide the people who are agitating for more democracy from what they call the patriotic majority of Hong Kongers, who basically just want to keep doing business. And there have been interesting and somewhat ambiguous signs from people like Hong Kong's richest man about how the really wealthy people of Hong Kong view this. And again, people who employ a lot of people in Hong Kong.
So if things were left as they were, people are quite happy in Hong Kong to identify themselves as Chinese.
Well, they're Chinese culturally, right?
Yeah.
And so they would identify as Chinese. They've done polls which suggest that they're not proud of being Chinese citizens, which suggests that, they're not, you would reasonably think they are afraid to be reabsorbed into mainland China. And under half, but close to it, of people at the transition were proud to identify as Chinese citizens. That has gone down continuously, almost with a couple of blips since. Among the 18 to 29-year-olds, who are still the backbone of the protests, they're the backbone of the protests in 2014 and before, it's 18 or 16%. I mean, so very few young Hong Kongers are proud to see themselves as Chinese citizens, so they don't identify with the People's Republic of China.
But the protesters don't necessarily want independence from China.
No, they don't. I think that seems fairly clear from the rhetoric. They're certainly not calling for it. That would bring an even more repressive response, because China is just basically never going to let Hong Kong be independent. And again, as the People's Republic of China has developed, it's developed its own financial systems. you know, they're still not what they have in Hong Kong. They're still fraught with lots of trouble, both bubbles, poor regulation. You know, the Chinese Central Bank doesn't have control over the situation the way I think even the PRC would like. You know, they still need Hong Kong. But even so, they're never going to let it go.
Okay, but I mean, like, since we're talking about a financial center and a commercial port and significant global financial center in the world, one of the biggest in the world, one of the most successful, etc. So if the economy of Hong Kong suffers, will that force China into backing down, into concessions, into, sorry about that, we didn't mean it, no extradition, you're fine?
I think the answer is no.
So then what's the end game? How dangerous is the end game?
The end game is very, very dangerous. I mean, so China, again, is much more confident even than it was a few years ago, although the Chinese economy is slowing down. China, in the 2014 protests, Hong Kong's economy suffered. The PRC's really didn't, not even in Shenzhen, which is this special economic zone right next to Hong Kong.
And that's where they're massing personnel.
And that's where they're massing armed police. Yeah. So, you know, they're pretty confident, the PRC is, that Hong Kong's business interests and maybe the ordinary person in the street who just wants to continue to enjoy a prosperous life in what is a very expensive city, right, where your livelihood could be threatened by this pretty significantly, is going to start putting pressure on isolate what they call the radicals. So Hong Kong's economy is suffering, but, the PRC is so big. You know, again, even local districts and cities like Shenzhen aren't suffering nearly as much as Hong Kong. So I don't think that's going to bring China to the table at all.
Well, then the end game is going to be like, this is just the beginning of an end, is it? Like, what did you say about 2047?
2047, Hong Kong fully reverts back to China, and the one country, two systems approach principle is over. Right, yeah. Now, there's a lot of indication that China is seeking to end it much, much earlier, because they basically failed to concede any significant democratic reforms and all the universal suffrage, which was promised under the agreement. And so,
well, then there's no way anybody wants to steal the place away from China. For instance, like, you know, what's the international view of what's unfolding there?
Well, I think because everybody has acknowledged that Hong Kong is part of China. Now, this is a strong statement in the context of these debates and these protests. Some various celebrities, like the woman who's playing Mulan, Yifei, has come out in favor of the police. Jackie Chan has given what people think, and he's from Hong Kong, right? A nationalistic PRC line on the protests. So the international response has been extremely muted, whether it's the EU, whether it's Angela Merkel, whether it's the British government. It's basically, they're recognizing this is an internal matter, and the most interesting thing has been some British politicians have suggested they do what they could have done, I suppose, just before they handed it over, which is give British citizenship to everybody in Hong Kong, right? Which would at least allow them to leave, but that would be a very strong action, and they've been criticized as neocolonialists by the Chinese government. Donald Trump's reaction has been very interesting, which he sort of feels like Xi Jinping should just sit down with the protesters and cut a deal.
Yeah.
but so the international reaction has been very muted. That's somewhat understandable, and I guess that makes the protesters' actions especially brave, since it's not clear that anybody's really coming to their aid.
Okay, but you're saying this extradition bill problem, which has now caused all of this, and all of this weekend that will unfold again, is the thin end of the wedge.
Yeah, this
is
just
back down.
This is just the beginning, and again, this may be the case where if they keep it up, they will find themselves, well, China will finally decide whether they're going to tolerate this kind of thing anymore or not.
Right, okay. Well, listen, thank you very much indeed. Graham Finlay, indeed, as in the School of Politics in University College Dublin. Thanks, Graham.
Thank you. Dave Fanning.